Good evening, everybody. We are in Psalm 46. It is a nice psalm. I'll spoil it for you. No one is close to perishing, though it seems to be in dire straits. It just has an overall better tone to it than some of the psalms we have been reading, been going through lately. Yeah, it is a encouraging psalm. It's a nice psalm. It's a reminder of who God is and what he does for us, his people. We talk in our young adult class, or I at least attempt to present a realistic view of God, meaning that it is a God that deals with our pain and our strife. It is a God that deals with our doubt, a God that works through our pain and suffering, that doesn't just promise us a rose-colored future. He doesn't promise us that everything will be well for us, that sometimes it will be bad. We will suffer. We will go through pain. And some of that pain will even be caused by God. In this psalm, we see an image of God, a real image of God in the midst of chaos, in the midst of everything coming down around his believers. And yet God stays true. And God offers something to us, something that we desperately need. And so some of the questions I want you to ask as we are reading through this psalm is, what is a refuge? You know, this is a word that we say often. We repeat this to ourselves often, that God is our refuge, that he is our strength. And we are going to be reading about that psalm where God says, this is what I am. I am refuge. I am strength. But what does that actually mean, refuge? You know, when we read this, we are reading this in comfort, that none of us are being persecuted. None of us are running away from something worse. That many times when we use this word, we are talking about it in church, in a refuge. Meaning that we are speaking these terms in a safe place. And yet God has a different meaning for this. When he says, I am a refuge, he is talking to refugees. And that's the second question. What does it mean to be a refugee? And this is a sensitive topic for us because we are in the midst of, what do we do with all of these refugees around the world? Do they need to stay there and work on their own country? Or do they come here and they might infect us, they might hurt us, we have a lot of insecurity around these terms of refuge and refugee. But yet God talks about it like he's talking to us, saying, I am a refuge for refugees. And so what does that mean to you? Well, when have you ever experienced being a refugee? When you need a refuge, you need a sanctuary, somewhere to be safe, somewhere where you know that all of the persecution and pain and the suffering is going to be left outside the door and it can't get you. I think of when you read through history and you read through what cathedrals and churches and mosques and all of these places used to be throughout history, they used to be sanctuaries. They used to be refuge. They used to be where you can go and you can run away and you can be safe. And I want you to understand that to an Old Testament Jew, to someone who is living under the law, they actually had cities of refuge. And so I want you to keep that in your mind, that when God built the system and when he dispersed the tribe amongst the land, he gave the 12 their property, and to the Levites, he didn't give any land, and instead he gave them cities, and he gave them the tabernacle, and that was their responsibility, was to take care of the tabernacle. And the tabernacle was a moving temple. It moved around the land. It moved around Israel. And wherever it went, people can look and see God in their tribe, God in their town, God near them. And these cities of refuge, these actual cities that the Levites were responsible for, were places where you can go and you can seek sanctuary. You can go and learn and you can be educated. You can go to these cities and learn about God. And they were spread throughout their brothers. They were spread throughout the tribes, these cities of refuge. And there's even a kind of a loophole, not so much a loophole, but a law built into the system to where if, let's say, one of your oxen, I know this many of you have oxen, so you're going to find this highly applicable to our situation. So let's just say one of your oxen escaped and somehow caused an accident and someone died because of it. Now, under the law, you are responsible for that death. And they can come after you, all right? It was open game on you. But let's say it is not your fault. Your only chance, besides going to that person and pleading your case before them, which is what you can do. But let's say, for instance, it was, I'm going to pick on Dave. Let's say it's Dave. You know, someone, something about his family died, and Dave is out for blood. Dave is not going to forgive. He is going to come after you, and he's going to take more than what you think is required. So your only choice was to run to a city of refuge. Your only salvation is to go to that city and plead your case before the Levites, and they would hear your case, and they would decide it for you. They were judges. And so when Dave showed up, or when somebody showed up to the city and said, hey, you have a person inside your city, all right, and they killed because of their oxen, this person died, and I require justice. The Levites would hear both sides, and they would judge, but they would be fair. So this city of refuge, this idea of a refuge, it is a sanctuary. It is not only just protection, but it is also justice. It is where people were protected, but also judged. It is where people went to be educated. It was a safe haven amongst turmoil. This is what a refuge was. So let us read, starting in verse 1 of Psalm 46. God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth give way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam and the mountains quake with their surging. There is a river whose streams make glad the cities of God, the holy place where the Most High dwells. God is within her. She will not fall. God will help her at break of day. Nations are in uproar. Kingdoms fall. He lifts his voice and the earth melts. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Come and see what the Lord has done, the desolations he has brought on the earth. He makes wars cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the shields with fire. He says, be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. You know, it's amazing when we sing that song, and it's so calm when we sing it, be still and know. Be still and know that God is God. That God is, that I am God. Be still and know that I am God. And we sing it so calmly, even though I just wrecked the lyrics. If you forgive me. I don't like leading singing at all, so that's why that happens. We sing that so calmly, and it's such a peaceful song, but in the midst of that psalm, we get to see what is surrounding these believers, all right? As he says, be still and know that I am God. It's amazing, because I would want to reply to that. Then why is the earth coming down on our heads? Why is chaos reigning? Why is all of these bad things happening? You want us to be still and know that you are God, but yet can't you calm things down in order for us to have at least the time, let alone the energy, to say that amongst ourselves? And yet there is this expectation from God that in the midst of chaos, we should be able to say, be still. Be still and know that he is God. It seems to be this defining characteristic of his chosen people. Their fact that they can look in the face of chaos, look in the face of destruction, look in the face of persecution, and be able to say, God is in control. God is in control. You know, I'm reading this book. It's called Early Christians Speak, and it's about the New Testament church and some of the struggles that they went through. And what was amazing is there's this chapter on the Acts of the Martyrs and just how this affected the culture, how it affected Rome, how it affected the provinces, how it affected the people around them when martyrs started to come out of the woodwork and they started to be persecuted and killed for their faith. And one of these martyrs that kind of came out of the woodwork, that came out as Rome was witnessing these Christians acting differently, was, and I'm blanking on her name, so you'll have to forgive me, But she was a slave. She was a slave girl, and she had roughly a two-year-old baby at the time. And so as she was being persecuted for her faith, because her owner found out she had converted to Christianity, which I find just amazing that she converted to Christianity and then was immediately persecuted for her faith and then ended up being martyred for this. And it was said that she was beaten. She was beaten ruthlessly. And so people were amazed by this new convert, this new Christian, and a slave continuing to hold on to her faith. And it was said that, and whether or not this is myth or whether this actually happened, that the people who beat her, the people who persecuted her, saw her faith and was converted themselves because they could not quite understand how someone under such persecution, under such pain and suffering, can continue to praise God. And it was said that she was burned alive with a song on her lips about her God. You know, this is something that the New Testament church, that Christians as well as Jews, were so familiar with. Living with a God that can cause and allow such chaos to happen, and yet require us, his people, to say, be still and know, he is God. He is God, and I am not. So how well do we do? How well do we do under persecution? How well do we do when hard times hit us? And I don't mean, you know, you bounce a check or there's no gas in the car and you're, right? Because sometimes that's what persecution looks like to us. That's sometimes what hardships look, and they're not, I don't want to downplay them. I don't want to minimize them because sometimes those are truly difficult and hard. You know, I remember I was trying to work on my car and fix my car, and cars are just punks. I just want to just strangulate them sometimes. And I had fixed this one piece on my car, and I thought, that's it, all right? And I had fixed it. It is done. And I go to, right when you work on your own car, you go to turn it back on, and you're like, please start, please start, please. You know, and it starts, and the engine light, or the check engine light's still on. And so I run some codes, and I realized I had fixed the wrong part. You know, I had replaced the wrong part. And so I'm like, why didn't I just get a code reader to begin with? But again, I'm hard-headed and very stubborn. And so then I go and I replace the second part, and the check engine light is still on, and I'm thinking, God, why are you doing this to me? How is this still a problem? And it was a knock sensor that needs to be replaced. I thought, all right, please, God, please let this be the easiest thing to possibly replace on a car. It is not. And it's still on. It is not. You know, we see that as persecution. We see that as the trials and the chaos. And we think to ourselves in the midst of those problems, God, is this what you prophesied in Revelation? You know, is this the hellfire and brimstone that we are supposed to? Yeah. How well do we do in the midst of just the little hardships that we come across? You know, and how well does that kind of predict how well we will act when the big chaos happens? You know, when the big suffering, when the big persecution, when the big whatever God has in store for his church, when that finally hits us. Because when I read the Bible, I get this impression that it's going to hit us. You know, John gives us in Revelation, it's a cycle. John gives us this beautiful picture of a cycle of the church of God. And he talks about, you will see growth and you will see amazing things happen and wonders and miracles, and then you will see persecution. And what's amazing about that is those Christians turn into martyrs. And those martyrs stand on the altar and they praise God on our behalf and they pray to God on our behalf. And we see this cycle of the church growing and being persecuted and being judged and being decimated, but growing, and then it's this cycle in Revelation that we see over and over and over again. So how well do we do? You know, I looked at this psalm and I thought, man, it's so easy to talk about God as this refuge and this God as the source of strength, but I think we already know that. I think our issue, or at least my issue, is, all right, how do I view the thing I'm running away from? And does that show me what the type of refuge God is for me? Meaning that if the thing I'm running away from, the thing I'm a refugee from, is my car breaking down and little tiny things that upset me and the little tiny pain and sufferings that I'm running away from, then what type of refuge is God? A God that saves us from car problems? A God that saves us from these little tiny insignificant things? Or do I look behind me and the thing I'm running away from is what? What? What are we running away from? And how does that show us the refuge that God is? Because he presents himself as, I am it. Look behind you. The world is coming down on itself. Look behind you and look some at the words he gives. And he intermixes this with such beautiful language as the peace that God provides. But look at verse 2. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth give way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam and the mountains quake with their surging. Is that what we are running away from? Are we seeking God to shelter us from something like that? Or to shelter us like from something like we don't like the president? Or we don't like Congress? Or we don't like... Do we see the world coming down around us? And we look to God and say, you are it. You are the refuge. You are the only thing that can protect me from the world that just seems to be against me. God is our refuge, our strength, an ever-present help in trouble. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. And he repeats it again at the very end. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. The God that protected Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The God who looked after Jacob, even though he sinned, even though he failed, and he failed a lot, God seemed to continue looking after him and providing for him and protecting him. This is the God that provided for Israel during Judges, during all of those horrible stories that we read about. This is the same God that provided for them every time they turned back. This is the God that provided a king for Israel when it seemed that God wasn't enough for them. And yet God never left them. He still worked with them and provided for them. This is the God in 1 Kings, 2 Kings, on and on, when we see Israel never seeming to learn what it is God is actually there for, and yet God continues to provide for them. This is the God that we read about in the Gospels. This is the God that protects Jesus, even when he is suffering his most. This is the God that we look for. This is our refuge and our strength. If you have any needs tonight, as we continue to worship this God, our fortress, our refuge, and our strength, if you have any needs at all, please come forward as we stand and as we sing.